Accumulate a little bit here, DMing some folks that are asking me about Zephyr so that we can kind of get them involved early if they are available. This price range is a good pullback, so not a bad time to tell people while they have a chance to get in kind of low. My two Zeph miners are chugging along pretty nicely. I think they're pulling like maybe somewhere between 4 to 5 Zephyr per month, which is not bad. I think the hash rate has settled down for the network at about 1.99 gigahash or something like that. There's some discussion in the Discord. Someone that commented about this sort of like high inorganic increase in hash rate, which could be probably due to just mining pools and things. But that's the interesting thing about proof of work these days is that, like, if you create a new proof of work chain, a whole bunch of miners will just suddenly just point their computers at that particular chain to mine. Which, you know, I guess is good or bad, depending how you look at it. A bunch of miners mine the coin quick, sell it and distribute it, that helps with decentralization. On the other hand, if like a very large miner was to get an outsized amount of the coin or amount of the hash rate, then that's considered negative. So I guess you never really know who is mining what, but if you want to contribute to the security of the Zephyr network, grab your PC and start mining some coin. That's the way to go. Yeah, my two devices are averaging about 34,000 hash per second, 34K. It's pretty good. Like I mentioned before, if you're going to mine Zephyr, I'd say you could do it on pretty much any PC. The AMD chips are definitely the most efficient. The 7950X in particular, I think, is the way to go. Because if you think about it, you're paying, like if you're going to mine a coin, if your chip is slightly more expensive, but all the other shit is the same price, your motherboard, your drives, whatever else you're going to put together on the thing, you have kind of like a cost of entry that includes the price of the motherboard, and these things run like $200, about $210 or $220, along with power supply and some sort of like case or stand or something like that. By the time, and the DRAM chips in particular are another small, like more of the pricey piece of the thing. So if you're going to be getting all that shit anyway, like you might as well buy the slightly better chip. I think the difference in hash rate I'm getting on the AMD 7000 Ryzen is about that one I'm getting about 16,000 hash rate. I could have done better with a little bit better motherboard and a better DRAM. So let's say it would have pulled like maybe 17,000 or maybe 18,000. The 7950 pulls in about, mines at about 22,000 consistently with no errors, no problems, not too much heat issues, whatever. So I think like the slight difference in the jump in price of another, like, I think $120 for the AMD 7950, will, you know, it gets paid back in about a month anyway. and all the other hardware is the same. So it's, to me, it's like that's the better, I think, overall buy. And it's super efficient. So power draw is very reasonable for what it is. Anyway, and I don't know like what the team is doing in terms of ASIC resistance for the network. You know, protocol changes that make it harder for like you know, a Bitmain device or whatever to be able to mine much faster. So what we'd like to see is like as much CPU compute as possible so that it decentralizes the network better. But the main concern people had was like, well, the hash rate on this is already like 2 gigahash per second, and Monero is like around 2.5 gigahash per second. Clearly, like with such a new chain that only started this summer, like that's not all organic growth, and that's kind of the concern. Anyway, but it's very difficult to have like purely organic growth on a proof of work network today, mainly because you have all these like pre-existing miners now, and they're interested in mining the most profitable coin at that moment. So as the price of your coin pumps, like there's going to be, you know, a tendency for miners to just click a button, start a miner up, and start mining whatever looks like it's on the higher end in terms of price. Not all of those miners are going to be people that are going to stick with the network necessarily. So just so some of those statistics, they'll kind of change as the price versus earnings, like to mine a particular coin, go down. So like when Zephyr's at, you know, $50, for example, it's going to be very popular to mine. When it's at $25, it's going to be a little bit less popular to mine, which is fine. Proof of work networks sort of find their equilibrium. Long term, I think like with Zephyr Network, it's all about the users, like how many people are going to hold this coin and keep it for whatever reason. I think privacy has a little bit of a premium to me in terms of valuation, because like if I have, so for example, if I have a coin that goes in my bag goes to 10 million or something, and that bag is private, to me that is better than another coin that goes to 10 million. You know, if my bag goes 10 million valuation, like it's better to have one that's private than one that isn't, from the perspective of just like, to me, that's an added feature. It's a benefit. You can use your imagination as far as like what that actual benefit is, like, because I don't want to say that here. But the point is, I think the fact that it's private is helpful. there's been some discussion also that like in the future, some of the things that could happen are additional exchange listings. So there's been a little bit of rumblings about maybe Gate.io picking up Zephyr. I don't know if that's true. Does not seem to have happened just yet, as far as I know. And potentially other exchange listings. So if, ideally, what you'd like to see is, like, the best case would be is if you get another 10x out of Zephyr, you really pump this market cap up to a substantial level, like maybe, you know, 500 million market cap or 700 million market cap, that level, then you get a new exchange listing. To me, that's better. And the reason is because once you line up those new, once the market makers sort of at those levels start lining up their bids, and what you're going to wind up with is like sort of a materialization of the new market cap. And it makes it much harder for the price of the coin to drop. So it's almost like cementing the new price in. I wouldn't look at like new exchange listings as like, okay, there's just a whole bunch of new users and therefore price is going to pump. That can be true, but you also have like an increased exit liquidity as well, because when market makers line up a new set of like order books, they tend to set the order books with the highest buys and sells around the new price, like if you go to any exchange. So to me, it's like it tends to cement in an existing price, both for buyers and sellers, and it prevents less dropping of the price if a new exchange is listed, because now you have like more liquidity to exit. So that's a good thing. But you want you want this to happen ideally after the price goes up a lot. So it's really, really helpful if like the community gets a lot bigger, a lot more users, spread the word and stuff like early, and price goes up, all the early users get the benefit of having an exchange that's going to then provide you with potential exit liquidity, which allows you to then like, it just simply allows you to sell much easier, right? Like that's the whole point. If you have a bunch of users and like you only 5% of people can exit, that's not great. If you have a new chain and 10% of people can exit with their gains, that's better. And of course, like you'll get new users and stuff on new exchanges. So things will lock in, they'll start, you'll form a new base. And then of course, like that whole new user base that's available from that new exchange may consider buying themselves from some of the coin, and then you can kind of continue upwards. So yeah, exchange listings sort of help, get you to like think about a series of steps. Price goes up, price goes sideways, price goes up, price goes sideways. New exchange listings help make the next step up sturdier is the way to look at this. And don't assume that just because like a new listing happens, something will pump. Good example is like KLS, this token we've been watching a little bit, like Carlson Network. I bought it at like 5-6 cents. I sold it about 16 cents. It continued to go up to like maybe 28 cents or some shit, but now it's back down to about 14 cents. And that's after a new listing. So new listings, again, it sort of helps with some of the exit liquidity. It doesn't automatically make, price pump to infinity. So new exchange listings, it's kind of like more of a meme effect where people assume that lots of new buyers are going to come in. So what you're going to wind up seeing is like a pump in the price before the listing. And oftentimes prices dump a bit after listings, and that's fine. It's just normal behavior. You don't need to overthink that stuff. So anyway, but there is a fair amount of, Zephyr being distributed, at these levels, which is good. Like you want a lot of new buyers to come in and buy the token. You don't want just a bunch of only just the miners to hold it. On the other hand, a lot of miners will hold it because they'll wait for, if they believe in the coin or whatever, they have a substantial amount that they're mining, they might be very interested in holding the coin for, much higher market caps, like 1 billion or something like that. Now, what you have right now is the production of about 8,000 ZEF per day. In fact, let me pull up the precise statistics real quick. So if you go to hashrate.no and you go to the Zephyr page, it shows that there's network difficulty of 233G. You have daily emissions of about 8,194 Zephyr, which amounts to about $200,000 worth. Let's look at CoinGecko. Let's see what kind of volume that we have at this point. Let's see here. Pull all the stuff up. So what you're looking at is, all the new coins coming onto the market, you want to be sure that they are slowly being bought up by people. So trading volume is dropped down to about 1.1 million at the moment. So it's kind of trimmed off, and that's pretty typical. So it was running high at around $8 million volume was sort of the peak. That was back in, when the Zephyr hit like $50, and then it's running about 1.18 million today. And then like, if you compare this to October, the chain was running like volumes of maybe $100,000, $50,000, these types of numbers. So we're definitely a 10x more volume compared to where the price was when it was like a fraction of the actual price. So definitely a lot more people have been attracted. I just saw a Twitter user post today that was kind of like, he posts kind of like hidden gems type shit. I think he had like 100,000 plus followers and he just posted it today. So those kinds of posts usually lead to like those followings kind of looking into these things. So having new users come in and grab themselves some coins is good. But yeah, like with new blockchains, it is absolutely best to have a few coins in the hands of lots of holders compared to a lot of coins in the hands of a few holders. So what you typically, you really don't want over-centralization of the coin distribution. Every blockchain has this problem where, like, you know, the ideal situation is to distribute as much as possible early. So early on in the chain, realize that what you are paying for when you buy a token like this is you're paying for the security of the network. You're basically paying for the future success of the network. And you're basically paying miners. Let's just be fair. That's what you're doing, right? Like, miners will mine. They need to pay the electric bills. And so that's the expense of running the business, so to speak, in a proof of work network. So that's normal. As you do that, those miners become, maintain and secure the network. They stick around. And then what happens is the perception of network security improves over the months and years that follow. So then what happens is that as the perception of the network strength improves, more people are willing to put larger amounts of money into the system. And as new exchange listings happen, you have deeper liquidity so that more people can enter and exit without very deep slippage. So, for example, if you want to go buy $1 million of ZEF, you don't want to have like the price move up from $24 to $50, right? You want to be able to buy at the price you want, and deep liquidity allows that to happen. If you don't have deep liquidity, remember, like, the order books are really thin, the price will pump as soon as you try to buy. So large buyers really effectively can't buy small cap chains for this reason. They can put in limit orders and raise the floor price, but they can't really just go market buy the thing, right? So higher liquidity brings richer users to some extent. But those would be users that see it as a store of value, because the higher the price goes, obviously the less multiples they get. So really, like, small chains ideally, like, benefit the small user with high upside and high gains compared to a very large user or a whale or something who would basically wind up just getting a lot of market slippage as a result of their purchases. So hopefully this, like, explains a little bit about how this works, the way the market sort of, like, plays out. And part of what I think is interesting about the Zephyr crowd is it's a lot of crypto native folks. Maybe some of you guys know how these things work, maybe you don't. But the point is, like, if you're, you know, running around on TradeOger and Mexi and shit, you're probably reasonably crypto knowledgeable and probably not an absolute newbie, more than likely. And I think that's a good thing. Like, you want protocols like this to have a bunch of users that are diehards. You don't want a bunch of newbies in here. You really don't. You want people that really think that this is a useful protocol. And are going to be interested in holding it for the long term, so we get to the $1 to $3 billion market caps and things like that that Caspa and Monero and whatever else have, right? So, you know, a protocol like this, if you're early, like, for it to be useful to you, it doesn't need to go to $100 billion market cap. Yeah, I mean, Lambos and everything, that's great, but realistically, like, if these things can get to $1 to $3 billion and settle in there, that's a pretty good place to be if you're this early, right? I don't think you need to, like, worry about much higher than that. If the protocol is really popular, the team delivers on whatever the fuck they're doing, maybe it goes up higher than that. That'd be amazing. But I think, it's useful to us as new users of this thing is if this thing is private, it parks at, like, you know, 10 billion market cap, you know, you can clock in or 10 or 100X depending on when you got into this thing. And, you just let it sit there, because then you have privacy. You have a gigantic stash of, you know, a privacy bag that you can use in the future for whatever you want. You can use it to ape into new things or whatever. Like, you know, who gives a shit? Like, the point is, like, it's basically in the ether, right? So that's the beauty of it. So I think, like, the benefit also of getting into kind of, like, I don't know what the right word to say is, but, like, really, really sharp crypto community is that you also benefit from a community that, like, you will tend to get rich from. So, for example, Up happened to mention this coin to me. He's like, "Ooh, man, you got to look at this thing. It's super interesting." You develop a network of people that I think help also in just general, like, trading and and you hear about new projects and things. And I think that's a beneficial aspect of the community. It's not just the bag you're holding, but like, you know, what other bags you might hold in the future as a result of sort of alpha that you might receive. So I think, not trying to turn this into some kind of fucking like paid Discord group or whatever, but you get the picture. Like, the friends that you know matter, and it can affect like what kind of things you might be able to get your claws into later as far as things that it might be interesting to buy. So anyway, just some thoughts. So like, I think like, so the title of the space basically, you know, privacy narratives. So if you look at the history of privacy, you know, Monero is among the first privacy chains that got, that popped up. It's like 2014 or something like that. Historically, like, privacy has not really caught much of a bid. I mean, if you think about like Monero being like maybe 3 billion market cap and whatever else, you have like $1 trillion plus market cap of crypto, and the amount that's sitting in privacy as far as store value might be like maybe, I don't know, 5 billion plus, maybe, with Monero sitting at like 5 billion. Let's see, where's Dash at right now? Dash is another one that has privacy capability. It's sitting at like 400 million. You have Zcash. Let's see what it's doing. I don't even know how private Zcash is right now, but it's there. And it's got about, again, $480 million market cap. So you're really talking about kind of, let's say if you take the majors and you add, let's look at Secret Network, SCRT. Secret's been around for a bit as well. It is running at a market cap of only 108 million. And it was a small one. It's a smart contract platform on a Cosmos SDK. It started around 2020, and it had kind of like a pump that went to about, oh, I don't know. At the top, it ran to about $9 from, and now it's sitting at like, what is the price now? Like 40 cents. So really mega pump and then dump. And this is because like it kind of got released right at the beginning of a bull market. So it went through very aggressive, like upward price discovery. But like, if you look at the stabilized price of it, its market cap's about 108 million. It's got smart contracts and other things, but it was always kind of complicated to use. The user experience was tricky because when you have privacy layers, and then you also have like non-privacy layers, and then you have to do smart contracts on top, it's a big complicated thing. It works. I mean, there's NFTs and all sorts of interesting things on that chain, but at the same time, like, market cap combined with all other forms of privacy market caps isn't very big. So everyone knows that they need privacy. When you explain it to people, they're like, yeah, I need privacy. But then again, like, if you look at how much people talk about it on Twitter, it's very limited. And you know, we all know that if, you know, if you've got $1 million in your wallet and you go to Starbucks and you buy a Bitcoin with it or something, then everyone can see your chain history and see what's in your wallet. You can see why that's a bad thing. You don't want people knowing what you have when you go to buy something. So public blockchains have the problem of being unimplementable for any kind of payments type of thing, because everyone says, oh, I'm going to pay with my crypto. You're not going to pay shit with your crypto. And the reason is because, like, as soon as your bag is big enough, people can tell where all your money went, like all the wallets it hit. Someone just has to be like slightly curious sitting at the register, and they can figure out who, you know, where your money went and what else you're doing with it. So, and then, you know, mixers and things like Tornado Cash and stuff got a lot of people in trouble, especially because the team is doxxed. The team member for Tornado Cash, I guess, got arrested for, I don't know what he did, supposedly facilitating money laundering or some other shit. Anyway, and you know, it's not impossible to believe that may be true, but I don't really know for sure. But anyway, like, these type of things need to be anonymous. Teams need to be not doxxed, in my opinion. Undoxxed teams are a risk, because what if they, you know, just stop working on the project, or what if they don't, you know, the project doesn't go on without them? So there is some risk, because you don't know who those teams are and, you know, what they're capable of exactly. But dox teams, like, for example, Secret Network or some of the others, the problem with being doxed is if you're insufficiently decentralized, then someone can come after you as like you set up a network that doesn't meet certain laws or whatever. And if regulatory concerns come along for privacy, then of course, like that, those same people become, get targets painted on their back. You wind up, you know, having like a stablecoin system like Doquan. You wind up having, you know, people calling you some kind of scammer, which he really wasn't. And he winds up having to get extradited to the US now. And he's like, you know, had his whole life fucked up. So I think what you don't want really is that scenario where someone has to be crucified for your coin. And I think having the team on Zephyr being anonymous to me, that's a plus side to me. Like I'd rather them fucking do whatever it is they're going to do, either make the chain successful or not successful, whatever. I'm sizing my bag accordingly. and the reality is like, you have to be cautious about the risks you take with any blockchain or whatever. But to me, short term, anonymous can be kind of a negative thing because like, you know, people say, well, what are they doing with their community pool? What are they doing? How do we know what they're going to be, what kind of shenanigans they're going to pull in the background? You don't know. But what you do know is they understand the seriousness of needing it for this type of protocol. So unfortunately, you're not going to get a situation where you have a doxed privacy coin and you're going to be happy about it, right? So like, and you're not going to be perfectly happy with an undoxed team. You know, so it's a trade-off basically, like both have potential risks to you, the user, or the system or whatever. And those risks should be considered, but like there's no situation where there's zero risk. And as a result, like you just have to weigh that in with your whatever thesis for using a chain like this. Anyway, but that's kind of like the issue with privacy. And some of the other privacy chains have dox teams, which I think are problematic it's might be good in the short run, but again, long run, it's a huge maybe. And also depends on how decentralized that project gets. You have tons of people building on the primary protocol and external wallets and whatever, then the risk goes down. And then the more exchanges that get listings of your particular thing, the more the risk goes down as well. So it's important to have a lot of listings. Secret Network, for example, just kind of quickly going into CoinGecko, has quite a lot of listings. Places like Binance, they got KuCoin, Kraken, Mexi, Gate.io, Osmosis, Bybit, Nominex, Tokenize, HTX, variety of other ones. So the benefit of them having a lot of listings has not automatically made their market cap $1 billion, though. That's a thing. And that particular chain is not proof of work. It is proof of stake. And you have a lot of inflationary emissions on that. Plus like the friction to actually get to Secret Network and use it and everything else. So it's there. Like it's available to use if you want to play with privacy in that type of network. Coin price is certainly relatively low in the beginning of kind of bull market and whatnot. Let me see what their chart looks like too lately. Real quick, they probably pumped like everything a little bit. Yeah, they were down at 25 cents and SCRT is up to 40 cents. So not much movement yet. So it's just kind of taking off from the sort of its bear market lows. Is it going to catch a big bid? Maybe. It depends. That's kind of gets to the topic here, the privacy narratives overall. If you see like the mixture of AI scams, which there are going to be a lot of increase over the next year or two, and the big like CBDC push over the next year with Europe in particular, I think people will be searching for privacy, and privacy could very much be like a big hot ticket, like YouTube conversation item or whatever. You know, the community gets into these narratives. So I think all the privacy coins are a bit of a bet on this narrative sort of taking off. But be careful, like human beings don't really care about privacy as much as you think they do. It's definitely been a niche space. So with Zephyr, I think I feel comfortable with the fact that it's such a low market cap and therefore there's reasonable upside and kind of a measured downside at like I think we're at 70 million market cap right now. So to me, that's like a good time in the market, like with a relatively bullish market beginning and you being in a small market cap coin. But it doesn't mean automatically that this is a narrative that's going to pick up. If you just look at Monero generally, like one thing that is noticeable there is it hasn't had Bitcoin-like performance, but it does have improving higher lows with each year, each cycle. So for example, in early 2020, it was sitting at like numbers like $50 average. And I think during that COVID dump, it dropped to like $37. And then like in this bear market, its low was about $111 and now has tracked up to today's price about $177. So it's got a really nice smooth takeoff for another potential bullish run. And I think if XMR starts to run on privacy narratives being the bigger player, then it increases the likelihood that people will look down the lower market caps, ooh, privacy, 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 and they'll go to find the smallest market cap things. You know how this works. And then like, you know, Zeph might catch an additional bid as a result of that. So I think any plus side to XMR will lead to some downstream effect plus side to Zephyr as well, just the way the market works. So just a thought there. So if you look at XMR's chart, it's looking pretty bullish right now. I think if it breaks above like, about 185 was kind of its bear market, like little mini top. I think if it hits above that, you'll probably see it do, I'm guessing probably a 2x easy. Pretty common. Assuming we had continue with bullish market. Last bull market, Monero went to like 480. It's now about 177. I don't own any right now, so I'm not really talking about it from the perspective of an owner here. It just looks like a decent chart. And I think the reason I care about it is because if it does well, then it bodes well for Zephyr's chart. Also, like if you look at the high for Monero, which was like 2018 during like DeFi summer, and I mean, not DeFi summer, for some reason, 2018 was the big year for Monero. Like it was kind of an off cycle pump. And I think the top was like around 550, something like that. And then the last bull market for Monero was about 480. So really you have this gigantic triangle forming with the lows going higher, the highs going lower. And I don't know, it's quite possible for Monero to go to, you could have some sort of gigantic giga run, I suppose. Again, no guarantees, but like the chart's really interesting. Gigantic mega bull flag over the course of like, from like 2018, flagpole to like now. That's a very long run. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. Like, so yeah, it could be like gigantic 7-year bull flag, which, the thing could moon potentially anyway. But if that does happen, I think Zephyr will really get a lot of the benefit from that, which is cool. Even XMR is really only down right now 67% from its all time high. So it's definitely climbing over time. Very interesting. Anyway, but that's kind of like the state of the privacy coins and such. Let me see what happened to Dash real quick. I bet it's looking very similar to Monero. Dash is ranked market cap 140. Its market cap is 400 million. And it had its biggest like pump again in 2018, along with Monero. And since then, it has been kind of looking kind of weak. So Dash, the previous bear market, like 2020, was like around $80. And now the thing is like $35. So Dash has been absolutely wrecked. It put in kind of like lower lows. So that just implies that nobody gives a fuck about Dash for some reason. So like, I don't think it's going to, for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to be something that anyone cares about. So anyway, but something to kind of be aware of there. So at the same time, Dash never sort of like built itself as a privacy chain. I don't think most people even know it has privacy properties. So there's that. something to think about there. So Dash, Monero, Zcash are kind of the big majors. Secret Network is one of the smart contract platforms. And then Zephyr now is proof of work combined with a very over-collateralized stablecoin as kind of a convenience feature. And with, I think, good upside just because its market cap is relatively low. The only, like I guess, bearish comment about Zephyr at the moment, like in terms of immediate price action, might be the fairly significant amount that's being mined. But you've got like $1 million of volume plus a day, and you have like miners mining around $200,000 worth at current price a day. So there's definitely some emissions going on right now, but that's pretty typical for an early proof of work chain to have high emissions. One thing to remember too is like tokenomics matter long term, but they don't necessarily matter in the short term. The short term price action for these things is almost all memes and like community engagement and getting new users. So these things, as you know, can like pump to really crazy valuations that have nothing to do with reality. And they can do so regardless of like tokenomics discussions. Those are like more like, so the high IQ people might not get into something or get into something super early if they're worried about tokenomics. The low IQ people, like, fuck it, I'm just buying it. I don't know what it does. Just take my money. The mid curve people that are the ones that like worry about all this sort of shit and then don't get in anything. Like, and then they wait till everything is pumped and then they buy. So this is definitely one of those things. Like, tokenomics is something that's like interesting, but it's in a bull market, it's more of a mid curve like distraction. And like, not of my, I'm not too immediately concerned about it in that sense. So anyway, but yeah, the other thing too is like, how many more influencers get on board with Zephyr? So we saw like another guy post today with a pretty high follower count. As the visibility increases, you oftentimes will see more and more people sort of post about it, especially if they bought at a good price. So the best influencer effect is the bag holder effect, where like if you own a bag and, you know, maybe your bag is down or you got a good price, you're more likely to talk about it. So almost everyone's way more likely to talk about a coin that they own versus one that they don't. I would say probably like 99% of people on Twitter are going to talk about coins that they own, which you would hope that's true in a sense, because like, you know, the reason they're talking about it is because they have a bag and they're incentivized to do so. But also, like, they believe in whatever it is enough to actually own the coin, as opposed to, like, you know, just simply people that are talking about. So analysts, you know, who are on YouTube that cover coins that they don't own, you know, how deeply invested are you going to be in learning about it if you're just researching for, you know, marketing purposes or something? The only way you could monetize that would be is if you owned a YouTube channel with a gigantic viewing, and then you could maybe make some money off each coin you talked about, right? But otherwise, like, the most obvious thing in crypto is like 99% of people that talk about shit have the coin. You almost don't even have to have a disclosure about it. It's like pretty obvious. That's the most reason why they would do it. So anyway, but yeah, the you got a nice little descending wedge on Zephyr. I think it's obvious with the gigantic number of new users compared to what it was back in October that like it'll catch a bid at some point at some price level here, whether it's at this price or otherwise. So me personally, what I've done is I've taken some low conviction shit that I have sitting around. Like, I don't know how much conviction I have in eGold, for example, and it popped yesterday, and I'm well into the green now because I've had it for the last couple of years. And sort of like I unstaked it a couple of weeks ago with the thinking that I might want to get rid of it. So I moved it to Mexi just so I can like consider converting to Zephyr if I get a good arbitrage there. So if my eGold goes up and hits like the $97 mark, where right now it's at 60 something, and simultaneously Zephyr goes down, I get a perfect rotation to sort of buy in a little bit more. So that's kind of what I'm looking at. On
it's time, Zephy or Zephy. It's time. It's fucking time to load up. You know why? Guys, it's that time of the fucking year.
It is that time of the year.
It's no longer
research.
Sell the dips and buy the tops. It's just fucking hodl season, boys. If you're not buying
that,
this,
that song's yet, making me buy more. That song's making me want to have more.
Dude, I wake up every morning and I just play that during
play the that song
every morning. And I get fucking excited to smash that market buy button.
Exactly.
I just loaded up on. I've got more Zeph than I've ever had, and I've got more now. I rotated out some of the plays that I was like just watching. They're looking like stable coins right now. I lost a little bit of money just due, like, I, you know, kind of averaged into some of these plays. They're just not really moving right now. Rotated some of that capital out into a little bit higher risk plays, but I just view have way more potential. So, like, obviously Zeph is one of them, as far as rotating capital into.
What else you got?
And then also HBB, Hubble protocol. So one of my buddies, a close friend of mine, who caught Luna really early. He caught IMX really early. He just threw a million into HBB. And what the premise behind that is, basically Solana, you know, has the potential to flip ETH in the future. It's like, if anyone used, if let's say use this metric or way to think about it. So if there's a brand new user that comes into crypto and you present Solana and you present Ethereum, where is that person going to go? What are they going to use? They're going to use Solana 10 times out of 10 because it's much faster, cheaper, a better user experience. And because of all that, you know, you got major entities that want to partner with Solana. So there is no maker DAO of Solana yet. So Hubble protocol is going to be the maker DAO. So they have the stable coin, which is USDH. It's over collateralized. And what's really sweet about it is, if, you know, if people are borrowing, like with Anchor, it's basically what Anchor was to Terra. But if people get liquidated, because let's say they borrow up to like 90% or whatever it is, and they get liquidated, that 10%, that like incentive there, instead of it going to the platform, it actually goes to holders of USDH, the stablecoin. And then also when you use, when you hold USDH, you get paid yield. And I think you get paid yield in multiple assets. So it's like whatever people are putting up, if they're putting up ETH or if they're putting up Bitcoin or Sol, like you're getting paid rewards in a multitude of assets. So I think Solana is just going to keep on growing and growing. It's one of the most hated trades just because people are like, oh, fucking FTX, these mid-curvers. They just don't see the actual tech being like, I think it's going to flip ETH eventually. I think it's just what's going to happen. And you know, they need that maker DAO. They need that de facto stable coin. And I think USDH is going to be that stable coin and Hubble protocol.
What's it back?
I don't know that the collab. Yeah. So that it is over collateralized. I don't know if it's HBB that backs it or if it's Solana. It is over collateralized. So it doesn't have that risk of death spiral, but it's not algorithmic like UST was. But you know, HBB, that token, is at like a $25 million market cap right now. It's like really, really tiny. So, you know, we've been moving the market. Like, me and my group have been moving the market, trying to fucking, like, I cleared out the order books yesterday on one of the exchanges.
So, it's about 16 mil market cap with the numbers now.
It's super fucking tiny. It's a high risk play, but I think that
it's been around since April. It's been around since 22 though.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the flow though of money, right? So like, let's say if Solana does just absolutely go on a tear, people are going to want to use some type of Solana-based stablecoin, right? Like they need an ease. And I used it today. I transferred. What did I do? My process was basically I staked some Sol. I got M Sol. I took that M Sol. I put it onto Hubble protocol. I borrowed against it, and then I was able to go buy more HBB. Like, very simple. You know what I mean? It was a seamless experience. Everything happened with a fucking snap of a finger, like transactions confirmed and whatnot. And it made me realize, like, damn, there's so much more incentive to holding USDH than there is to USDC on Solana, because you do get the yield. I think the yield's like 5%, but then you also get all the benefits of like liquidations and whatnot, right? So like all of that, there's real yield that goes to USDH holders. So you know, I'm in enough to where I get excited. I think that it, if it pans out the way I think it can pan out and will pan out, that will be worth, I mean, it could go to, you know, at least $1 billion market cap for Hubble. So, and I think it's got a pretty cool name and it's got a catchy narrative, right? Like at the end of the day, when you look at narratives, it's like, okay, what is going to become that de facto DeFi hub of Solana? And I think it's going to be Hubble.
So they don't have a, MakerDAO style thing yet at all.
Nope. This is it, bro. This is literally it. And so I'm going to be coming out with some content around Hubble. Obviously I'm going to pump my own bags, right? Like what the fuck is the point of having a bag if you're not going to ship?
I'm not in Solana at all at the moment. So that's
what I would buy heavy at like $20. Right. So like, I just had a feeling, I'm like, okay, the tech with that Fire Dancer and all that stuff, they have like crazy upgrades in the technology where it's like 700 to 800,000 transactions per second or something like that. Something insane that they just boosted it up to. And then you look at the partnerships like Visa, right? Like Visa chose Solana to have a partnership with because it's the only platform, it's the only blockchain that's fast enough and cheap enough for them to build infrastructure on. You know, like there's no other chain that can do what Solana does. And they have that saying, it's like only possible on Solana. And that's becoming
assuming, of course, that Solana actually can stay, keep its uptime.
It's had 100% uptime. And I listened. I was a hater on Solana because when all that shit was happening, when it had downtime, and realistically, right, bro, it was less than 1% downtime. So like it was 99% uptime during the last bull, and they just had so much users come on and they weren't expecting that type of growth. And if that same growth would have happened on ETH, ETH would have fucking exploded. So like, it's kind of unfair to point the finger at Solana. Like the more I've stepped back and look at the situation, there's no way that ETH could have handled that type of growth that Solana had during that period.
It's a little bit different because like proof of work, you don't get a chain halt though. That's the difference.
Yeah, but gas fees, it would have been just like a nightmare. So
it's still unusable. Solana,
they've had in like 2023, they've had 100% uptime, and they're doing, I mean, I was looking at some stats. They're doing like just as much I forget what the exact metric is, but there's a lot of like they're matching ETH in a lot of ways. And so I just think Solana has the potential. If you look at the ETH chart and the Solana chart, when ETH first had its cycle, it's scarily like or eerily similar as far as like the run up and the pullback, and the charts look almost identical, like literally almost identical. Sure. So I'm thinking if you just look at previous all time highs and then new all time highs in the next cycle, it's usually a 3x. So I think that puts Solana at around $600 if it were to 3x its previous all-time high, which I'm my conservative target is if things go as planned, Solana is going to be around like $300 to $400. And I think that if that happens, Hubble is going to be worth a fuck ton more than it is today because all of that DeFi within Solana is going to be happening through Hubble.
They're the more immediate go-to for now until something else shows up.
And then ultimately, you know, you get your gains from that. And then it's like, okay, well, do I want to like have a public ledger where I'm trading? And then it's like, it goes back to the whole value prop of Zeph, right? So like, I would way rather, I mean, if Solana had some type of privacy and whatnot, like Zeph has, that would be fantastic. It doesn't.
You'd let it pump, slide into privacy trade-offs. And speaking of which, while you were talking, I was going to interrupt you that Zeph had hit like 2350, and I was like, that was a good buy. Now it's back up to 24. Anyway, but yeah, you've got a nice like sort of like, you know, descending sort of like wedge shaped sort of chart on there, which is good. Like it means that as the price drops, like people are picking up the lows. As it goes along.
It's not just this like aggressive everybody selling. It's like kind of a slow bleed out, and then at the same time, like, you know, it's a stable drop. It's a nice, easy, not this fucking vertical death spiral that we're all waiting for.
With this kind of high volume and like high new user base, you're typically not going to get like just a straight pump and dump or something like this. Because like in a traditional pump and dump, like let's say it's just a meme coin or some bullshit, or like some kind of rug pull, what you get is like straight up, straight down, because there's just no new users. The only people that cared about the fucking thing were the people that bought it at the very bottom, and they're dumping on the few people that showed up, but you know, because of some YouTube video or something. With something like this, where people actually want more of it, then you'll see charts that look like this, where it's more of a steady drip down, and then like it catches a bid and eventually like just starts to balance out. The buyers and sellers start to balance out. The chart gets flat ultimately, and then you know everyone's like, "Ooh, the price is flat now. I can get it. I can tell my friends about it, whatever." And then they will just sort of like all jump in. But yeah, I'm hoping, I'm like watching this Zephyr go down. I'm like, I'm just crossing my fingers that like the, what I need to have happen is Eagle in particular, which I moved to MEXC. I want it to like if it does its move, then you know I'll have like a you know whatever a 2x or 3x on that shit, and then I can just drop it into Zephyr. I did the same thing with KLS. I was like, this looks fun. I bought it at a nickel or whatever it was. Sold it at about 15 cents. Dropped into Zephyr. So yeah, just kind of increasing the bag size. Well,
if you buy some Hubble, it's super illiquid right now. So like if you buy some Hubble, just at least get a little position. Cause like my, so my buddies, like these are guys that, you know, the whale group that is now scaling into Hubble, like these guys made anywhere from 10 to 100 million with Luna. Right. So like this is what our group has our eyes on. And like, again, one of my very close friends, we had to set these limit orders. Cause like,
you can't.
It's tough to buy, you know, like you're moving, if you go buy like $100,000 worth, you're moving that price up by like 15 cents, 20 cents, you know? So like you set an order and then just like try to get it filled as much as possible. And then, you know, wait a little bit, set another order, wait. Do the same thing over and over again. But yeah, I mean, if you looked at it, I think like we could, if as long as the markets don't nuke, we're gonna send this thing a hell of a lot higher in a pretty short amount of time. So you know, we don't get into projects. Like, first off, I don't talk about projects that, like, if you look at my last, you know, four or five, it's like Rune called that, IMX called that, Sold called that, and it's like, it's just, I know the people that I work with, like a lot of us, like we all come together and like, what's interesting, what's the narrative, what's popping. Zeph, obviously that's a strong narrative.
Yeah.
This HDB thing, high risk, high reward, could work out, could nuke, but the people that are investing are the same people that, like, you know, there's like a lot of very smart, like on the right side of the mid curve or whatever it is, a lot of people on the right hand side aping in. And there's like no retail that's really in yet. And that's just because, you know, you have to think like a couple steps ahead. Like, where is the money in these protocols, right?
The dim would usually show up late to a large extent, unless you're talking about something that's really, really obvious.
Yep. You got to think, okay, well, if the money, like right now, what happens when, like with CBDCs, right? If we're talking about Zephyr, it's like CBDCs are going to be launched at some point in time. And that's like just an insane thing to think about, where the government just has full control over your money. And there's no such thing as privacy. And as the pendulum swings harder in that direction, there's going to be that counterbalance where it's like, okay, I'm seeing this like extreme on this side of the spectrum. I need something else that's also extreme on the other side. And that's where Zeph becomes like very, very attractive in a world that becomes progressively more centralized and more, there's more just control over currency. It's like you know you're giving up your control. Okay, well, where can I have the most control and the most freedom and privacy? And it's on this side, and that's what Zeph is. So, you know, it's like catching, that's where we're headed, right? Like, so seeing a few steps ahead, like as a chess master, the chess master isn't focused on the single move, they're focused on like, you know, 3-4 steps ahead, and they're basing their move that you see right there off of predicting what their opponent's going to do in the next 3 or 4 moves. So same thing goes here in crypto, man. It's a game of chess. You're not looking
at
like,
in fact, there's right now, I'm pulling up the AtlanticCouncil.org's like CBDC tracker map. And this is pretty interesting. There's a map. You've got 11 launched CBDCs already. They include countries like Bahamas. They include Anguilla. that include, like, let's see, what else? Nigeria is looking at one, or it has launched something. So, and then, like, Europe is in, like, so the next 2 years is going to be, like, the discussion phase and whatever. But certainly Europe's got some big activity going on. So there's, like, a map that shows 11 launched so far, 21 pilot, 33 development, 46 in research, 16 inactive, and 2 canceled. I don't know what those are. That's
fucking crazy, man. Like, who? So these governments are
Senegal and Ecuador canceled some small retail use case ones. But other than that, there's a lot of them.
So, like, obviously, it's just wild to think that we elect people to be in government positions, and then government people, like, really don't do things out of the best benefit for the people. And at one point in time, I feel like it's just spiraled out of control. And a lot of it, I was talking with my wife the other night, talking about, like, the what is that, altruism? Like, look, I know what to do with the your
effective
money.
Altruism, people.
Yeah, like that is so much of what government is, with, like, this.
It is
this woke bullshit, right? With, like, Disney and stuff.
It's just the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Problem.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, right?
But so it's but right now, like, in development, you've got Canada, you've got U.S., you have Mexico, you have Brazil. You have Colombia. So between all of those, you're talking about, like, the vast majority of this side of the world. You have Europe, UK, you have the Norwegian countries, you have Montenegro, incidentally, Mauritius.
What do you think?
Most of Southeast Asia.
But check, like, this out, though. So, like, remember when there was, like, the alcohol prohibition, and then, like, what happened from that? There was, like, the speakeasies and this underground rebellion. So do you think that as the government pushes these, like, authoritarian, like, just crazy oversight currencies called CBDCs, do you think that that's going to ignite more of a rebellion towards crypto, like, in the sense of, like, you know what I mean? Because people, if you're in this weird spot where it's like, yeah, it's not really a problem, I'm not really going to act.
I don't know how much pain.
You know,
there's public blockchains, there's open ones, and then there's going to be the CBDCs. That's going to be where a lot of the liquidity sits. In fact, the vast majority of liquidity will be in the CBDCs, and then there's going to be, like, havens that it's like why the protocol Haven has called themselves Haven. Their idea, you know, the idea is you're in a safe haven in smaller protocols with, you know, your little privacy bucks that you sneak around with. I think that CBDC type methodologies are going to be common. And the reason is because people want more fast settlement times. Governments don't want to spend as much money on stuff like physical currency. There's going to be there's always a desire to want to sort of monitor what the people are doing with their money. And that's part of it. So, like, the pilot map looks really interesting. You're talking about South Africa, Australia, Saudi Arabia, Iran, Turkey, India, China, Kazakhstan, Russia, Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, then a few Southeast Asian countries. Fact of the matter is, like, the and Sweden, here's one. Quite a few, like, Asia is really already in pilot, whereas the Western world is really in the development side. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to get to the point where, like, China's particularly what they're trying to do is get to a point where their currency becomes stronger and stronger, much more efficient to transmit, and try to sort of, like, convert Asia to their thing versus the dollars. So there's no question.
What about this other thing that's going on, though, with, like, the BRICS nation and trying to go gold back and shit? Because my dad, who's, like, QAnon fucking conspiracy theorist, won't ever shut up about, like, Alex Jones type people. Like, he's like, everything's going gold back. And I'm like, it's impossible the way that the monetary system.
No, in fact, you know it won't go gold back because it's capital inefficient. It's the same problem as, like, collateralizing ZEF. So the goal, like, gold back is just sort of a meme effect more than it is anything real. And, you know, it's basically this, the countries, what they want to do is you can't not go to CBDCs, because if you don't, then your monetary system becomes your monetary system becomes kind of obsolete. On the other hand, if you do go CBDCs, you create digital tyranny. So basically, it's the same problem as AI. It's just one more example of how technology fucks us all at one level or the other. Like, so with AI, the same thing. You eventually get to digital tyranny. With CBDCs, you get to digital tyranny. None of these things really, like, are they don't really promote freedom in the way that you think that they might. And interestingly, like, the Bitcoin blockchain, it was the actual technology necessary to create CBDCs. So, like, the Bitcoin maxis forget that really quickly, that, like, tech can be used for anything once created. You could use nuclear power. Equals MC squared can be used to create nuclear power, but it can also be used to blow each other up. Same thing is true here. Like, there are some privacy technologies that might be helpful. On the other hand, you have, like, CBDC-style technologies that could be relatively tyrannical. And, like, even when quantum things come about, right, like, who has the most quantum compute? It's going to be central actors. That's going to be China, the U.S. It's going to be, like, gigantic corporations. It's not going to be you and me having a quantum computer in our basement. So the reality is, like, the reason why most blockchain systems will not survive is because the new paradigm will be quantum-based money, almost assuredly, as this thing goes along. That's why, like, one of my hedges is I buy a lot of, like, quantum computing-related stock. Particularly, I bought a bunch of IBM because they seem like they're a good, like, leader in that. But, like, all of these systems are temporary. Even the CBDC-based systems that you see being developed now are, like, a gigantic experiment. And I think the next, like, 100 years, you're going to have, like, between AI and all these different things, you're going to have a real, like, evolution in what, like, money looks like, how value is transferred. And I don't think it's all good or bad. I think the reality is, like, the U.S. cannot allow another country to basically be better at CBDCs than we are. Does that make sense? Because otherwise you lose the network effect. So a big part of why the dollar is worth what it is because the network effect of everyone using it. And it being the sort of, like, base fiat of the world, I think it's like 90% of the currency on float. It's really quite big. And to continue that, you have to continue the network effects. But to some extent, we did that with, like, control of the SWIFT system. But it's becoming increasingly obvious that that's going to be harder and harder to continue. This is why, like, the other big play for sort of centralized oracles and centralized truth and transfer is the Chainlink ecosystem is probably doing the most in terms of, like, true, like, creating a true, asset valuation system out there, which is why I'm kind of bullish on that too. So that's kind of like the high IQ take sort of, like, angle is why someone might be interested in Chainlink, even though, like, the dimwit curve doesn't really favor, like, mega price pumps on it. It's interesting, but there's a lot going on, Logan. I don't think there's any one conspiracy. Like, all the conspiracies are essentially believable when it comes to CBDCs and the potential for digital tyranny. But the problem with the conspiracy theorist is they have no fucking actual answer to what to do about it. So the reality is we're going to be living in that world, whether you like it or not. It's better to just shut the fuck up and actually just plan for it than to, like, sit there and think you're going to put the E equals MC squared genie back in the bottle. You're going to put the blockchain genie back in the bottle. You're not going to do this. Like, it's not going to happen. Right. Like, it's basically computing systems and math. And, like, once you've discovered a new method, that method is there for good. And or at least, like, that new paradigm becomes, like, fixed in stone and not much you can really do about it. But I do think, like, the privacy narrative, though, catches a bid because the more of the shit that comes out and the more people in every country that are like, fuck, I need to have, like, a bag on the side that has nothing to do with these other things. Like, I think you will see sort of higher lows every season with privacy coins, which is what happened with Monero in particular. So for some reason, Monero has maintained a bit more popularity than the Zcashes and the Dashes of the world. And the Monero community seems to still be active. In fact, I went and looked up a question that one of the guys was asking, which was, like, is Monero quantum compute resistant? And so far it is not, but there's some talk in the Monero forums about, like, what kind of adjustments a protocol would have to be needed to make it more quantum resistant. I think it's the privacy ring signature part that's harder to fix in order to do that. But like any blockchain theoretically can fork and become more quantum resistant by modifying the difficulty rating on how you like mine it. So there are different calculations you can change to make it more resistant, but whether that can be done with Monero or with Zephyr for that matter, to where old transactions remain private after the new fork, that's the part that people were debating whether it's possible or not. So I think, again, like the dimwit version of this is like, well, privacy as a narrative is going to be a much bigger play potentially over the next couple of years with all these CBDCs in development. Like I said, 21 pilots and 33 in development, that's a lot. The narrative will front run any kind of worries about fucking quantum computing or whatever. Like the dimwit, the midwit, they don't fucking know what quantum computing does. Like they have no idea when that's going to have an effect. In fact, even the geniuses don't know exactly how bad of a problem that's going to be and exactly like when to implement changes. So the reality is like that narrative is a much, like that's a different narrative entirely. And you would hedge by owning things that have to do with quantum computing, I think is the way you hedge that if you're going to bother. But like, that's kind of like the more like, you know, the high IQ version of like what one might do. But for the short term, man, like privacy stuff, I think it's like time, the next couple of years, like you, it's very easy to make a privacy argument with the kind of shit that's coming out. That's kind of my thinking.
So, Sefi, there's one more thing which could come up in the near future. You would probably see more banks being really restrictive on larger transactions to other bank accounts, like you wire money to friends and family to buy something. It's already difficult to withdraw cash. But I think with the banks being that leverage, and like that thing on the liquidity layer, you will see more of that coming out. And that will be an argument for CBDC rollouts, because it's like, okay, the money's safe because it's a CBDC, it's always there. Kind of, my guess is they would pull this kind of narrative.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, you can't really time these things exactly, but certainly, like if you whisper in the ears of all the crypto crowd that, hey, by the way, like we need privacy, we need privacy, we need privacy, like eventually they'll sort of realize it. I find it very interesting that like I suspect like one issue is that like at some level, most people in crypto, especially in like especially the Bitcoin community, at some level are just bag holder hypocrites. This is the problem. Like the reality is that while BTC is reasonable at this in terms of a store of value narrative and a good network effect, at the same time, it is by definition not private. And so therefore, like it has, yeah, definitive limitations in terms of any kind of like real world usage. It does function well as decent on-chain collateral in the sense that you can prove that you own it by, you know, that's, you know, verifiable scarcity is kind of one of its strong features, but the lack of a privacy element, like you would have to be some kind of a hypocrite if you didn't understand like why that's relevant to people and why like digital tyranny is a problem. And the way digital tyranny works, by the way, and I talk about this a little bit, there's a feedback loop of what I consider like the machine totalitarian state. And the way this works is basically, okay, you've got, let's say you're in China, and so there are sort of cameras everywhere, and they're kind of watching people and stuff, and, you know, maybe the state doesn't like the type of t-shirt you have, you know, it's like anti-state t-shirt, right? These cameras are getting better and better, and especially with AI, can pick up whatever the people that program it want them to pick up. You know, this person has, you know, a meme t-shirt that's associated with, you know, this, and we want to get that, we don't want that to happen. So it's very easy to sort of then like round up in a surveillance state people that, you know, are, you know, silently protesting whatever you care about. This stuff is obvious to most of us. Like, this is the easy part. Like, that's not the point I'm trying to make. The surveillance state and the kind of like, you know, the Orwellian type of drama, that's the superficial easy part. The hard part comes in where, let's say you're a politician in China, or let's say North Korea, and you're like, you know what, this is ridiculous. Like, why aren't we doing this, and this instead of that? Like, why don't we become more open and like maybe whatever. The point is you are against the party line, even if you're slightly. So let's say you're not a hardcore communist, but you're kind of a moderate communist. The moderate communist actually starts having their life be put in danger. Why? Because the moment they start talking something anti-party, then what happens is you got that slippery slope type of thing where you're just not communist enough, right? This guy, he's kind of on the edge. We're not so sure he is like legit communist. Now, you know, you have AI monitoring their phone calls. You have AI monitoring their every sort of action. You have AI monitoring what their family's doing, whatever, right? Like you basically have a system where you're being watched 24/7. And even if you were a quote unquote good citizen, the machine can basically perceive you as being not quite as good as the next guy, right? This is like, you know, Animal Farm, you know, type 101 type of stuff. And so there's this kind of like push towards increasing like conformity, and to the point where you wind up with a North Korea like environment. And then, so even within China, like the probability that you wind up with a North Korea like state actually increases by the minute. Like it's rising exponentially by every single day that passes that new tech is implemented, because it brings the cost of implementing a machine state down with every day that these things become more efficient. I mean, to the point where we're getting like Minstrel released open source, you know, like there's an 85 gigabyte model, which you can download onto your own personal computer and run an LLM that works pretty good, almost as good as GPT 3.5. Like, just imagine that for a second. Like every fucking computer you own, you know, like I bought a $70 NVMe, like Western Digital Black hard disk for like, I don't know, $80, right? Like 1/10 of that space will house an LLM that can monitor the shit out of you. So basically you can put like in almost any device, you can put a very small, you know, LLM type machine in play, you know, in your own personal computer for that matter. And it doesn't take long for then China to say, oh, the only computers that are allowed in China are the one that has this monitoring tool inside of it. Right. Because if you're willing to spy on your population with cameras, the odds that you're going to spy on your population, banning the internet there, you're going to spy on your population with these types of tools, China, the probability becomes near
100%. China would be a bad example for that because they already had this kind of control structures in place long before these technical possibilities. I mean,
yeah. And the Chinese in particular, by the way, are extraordinarily stupid in this regard, by the way. This is how societies get absolutely decimated. What happens is you get situations like North Korea and it becomes extremely repressive to the point where like you're the human being within that space becomes a pure absolute cog in the wheel, just an absolute machine. And the effect long term this has that we've seen in societies is absolutely breathtakingly bad. Almost every example of this that happens. But the difference here is that machines now run it. So when the human beings finally decide, you know what, fuck, this is a little bit too repressive. I don't know if I really want to wake up for calisthenics at 5 a.m. and then, you know, eat this and do that and do this and do this. The AI is telling me I have to do it. The problem is it's too late because now anything that, you know, you say that you want to do that does not conform basically becomes against the state and against the machine. And the machine can be vastly more totalitarian than any human being because it doesn't have any biological needs. It doesn't have to worry about sex and money and whatever else. It just simply runs to exist. And the humans within it don't necessarily program the thing to, you know, to optimize for human liberty. There's a tendency to optimize these things for security, safety, capitalism, you know, whatever the ism you have. It's optimized for those things, and it does so at an extreme level to where, like, You don't really get, at the end of the day, you don't wind up with AI moderates. You have AIs become extremists because they're optimized for one particular, you know, thing. And any sort of slight variation in weights that you put on this thing, it becomes like, in other words, if you become optimized to become an effective altruist, well, guess what? You get a fucked up world, even though altruism was your goal. If you optimize for like absolute libertarianism, you get a fucked up world because then you have anarchy. If you modify a little bit too far in the wrong direction for sort of authoritarianism, you get a fucked up world. So the reality is, like, human beings solve this problem by having a war occasionally, killing each other off and like, okay, like, you know, making arguments at universities or whatever. And then like, maybe if a country doesn't, you know, is looking like they're too aggressive, you go blow them up. The thing about AI world, you know, where you connect everything with CBDCs and crypto, is it becomes like this machine you can't turn off. So my fear with crypto is not so much whether or not we're going to get more liberty with our money. The most, the largest fear of crypto would be that it actually provides the sort of like oil for AIs to just do whatever the fuck they want.
AI. Yeah.
Kind of. Yeah. You're basically, backbone. You're creating a mesh network for AI essentially that can't be turned off. So crypto, like the dystopian version of crypto is that. And it's just as dangerous as like unfettered AI problems on society. Yeah. Interesting stuff though. But anyway, like the privacy narrative, like will come long before that kind of dystopian hellhole might come. And that will, like, that could come within the next few years, just looking at the map of how many countries have CBDCs by either in pilot or in development right now. It's pretty cool stuff. Like,
I guess the human just,
it's interesting.
Every once in a while has to gasp into the abyss to actually become aware of what's ahead, right? If you don't show them, they don't believe you, right? So we have to kind of screw it up to some extent, or we know better, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I don't want to be, you know, I don't know if I'm the John Connor of the age as far as like, you know, the Terminator type situation, but the reality is you wind up with human societies that are going to, you know, they're going to form for anti-machine societies, and they're going to get bigger and bigger. The more concerned people get about sort of their life being kind of constrained. But my fear is it becomes just too late at some point, because look at North Korea. How long have they had to embrace a more like straightforward, freedom loving society with a lot more connections to the rest of the world? They've had plenty of time, right? And it has not happened. So that kind of deeply entrenched system is something that human civilization, because humans work together, you know, monkeys don't work together at this scale, right? They don't, you know, you don't get hundreds of thousands of monkeys forming a country, except for our monkey species. You don't get hundreds of thousands of lizards forming a civilization and then creating like a system that can, you know, control them. So you see, like, you don't see anything at this scale with any other organism on the planet. So because we haven't seen something at this scale, we assume that our world, our livelihood, and the way we live are going to all be the same like 100 years from now. And really, like, the further we progress, the simpler it becomes for technology to become the totalitarian, not necessarily humans. It's not like it's going to be it won't be the humans in China that matter anymore, because the machine will drive all the incentives. And it will drive everything that gets you paid. It'll drive everything that monetizes your content. It'll drive everything that, you know, in the background, these machines humming around will really just reduce the human agency of your civilization, no matter how you look at it. And it's already happening. I mean, look at TikTok, look at the internet, whatever. You see it happening step by step. But I think there's going to be an interesting situation where countries are going to have to make a decision. Wait a minute, like, how are we going to deal with this? On the one hand, a country that has like an AI-based civilization is going to dominate, because these things are fucking ingenious, right? Like, they're just absolute superhuman powers. You know, they're going to have superhuman warfare powers. They're going to have superhuman game theory powers, even superhuman monetary, you know, strategies, whatever. So you're not going to stop using them, because you're an arms race. If you don't keep up, well, then you just, you know, you wind up with your civilization falling behind. Not to mention, let's say North America decides, you know what, we're not going to go this route. We're going to go Luddite here. We're going to go cash. We're going to have limit the internet, whatever. But then how do you solve the problem of the other guy having all these tools and weapons? You're not going to be able to maintain your hegemonic power. And eventually those people get so powerful, they'll eventually invade you and take over the world, take over your country, or they don't even have to invade you. All they have to do is have the like AIs take over the internet in terms of content creation. And the free countries will have things like TikTok show up and they won't really do anything about it because they want to be free. On the other hand, the totalitarian countries won't do anything about it because they're totalitarian. So like at the end of the day, like information cannot be contained. And, you know, information in the form of AI is basically a you know, it's your dear leader, but you can't ever put your finger on it. And it's not like Terminator where, like, well, all the human beings come together and blow up some base. Like, there is no evidence that there's going to be some base to blow up. Like, most of the, if you look at decentralization with crypto and then decentralization with with AI, both of these things, you don't have a way to really shut them down. So you'll have enclaves of people that'll hide for a while. But realistically, like, you have systems that are going to influence the human behavior on a grand scale, and you have no way to shut it down. So the funniest thing is, like, people have the stupidest conspiracies about, like, the most useless of shit, like vaccines and whatever. Like, this is at a magnitude level that is a millionfold more important in terms of, like, you know, whatever big pharma, whatever the fuck they're doing. Like, it's not even close. It's not even like, and these things are coming very fast and at a planet wide level. And the reality is, like, most midwits and dimwits have no fucking clue what any of this is. This is the reason why they'll just become slaves. Like, and then the high IQ people have no way to solve for it, because there's no way to fix it without becoming some kind of Luddite, where you kind of eschew technology and then try to run away. But where the fuck are you going to run to? So all you can do is weaponize it. And US military right now has, like, I think, like, into the thousands of AI related projects related to weaponizing everything from robots to planes to drones to you name it. So you can't not do it, because, like, these very, very expensive weapon systems like F-22s and F-35s and shit, like, you can blow those things up with a, like, like a AI powered missile drones. You can blow these things up at a fraction of the cost of building those things. So, like, everyone's driving towards this, like, AI cliff, and no question, like, it should be in anybody's mind that one of the number one applications of AI is military applications. It's the entire Terminator story pretty much playing out in a nutshell, and getting pretty nasty. And then on top of that, we have this, like, habit of, like, giving other countries our weapons to use in their little wars, right? Like, the Russia does it, US does it, Europe does it. And now you're, like, giving people all sorts of little nasty little bastards, you know, little AI controlled missiles and robots and shit. Like, you know, hello, just wait, you'll see.
Yeah, one of the big problems is the tech is not just limited to, like, big CPUs. You basically can run it, the calculations, and even old tech, right? It just takes you longer, but I mean, these new open AI models are really small. I mean, it takes a lot of time to generate them, right? But it's not that kind of a big.
Yeah,
it's not difficult to get there anymore, right? They will optimize themselves. You know, I mean, that's basically
exactly. They're going to self-optimize pretty quickly, especially the decentralized ones that can run on your computer. Just imagine you have a bank of 1,000 computers, and you're running 1,000 of these local LLMs, and now you have them talking to each other. They don't need to speak in English to each other, by the way. You can optimize these things to speak in whatever language that the computer decides to create. It's basically gobbledygook as far as anyone else is concerned. And therefore, you won't even know what they're saying to each other. Forget about what you think you're going to align them with. It's just nonsense. The alignment narrative is just silly. The most likely outcome is we have a world that within 50 years is basically like a strange machine state, that where increasingly the mass behavior of human beings is influenced by the various, like, actions of the machines in the background. You already see it, of course, with simpler algorithms like Facebook and TikTok and whatever. And you know how easy it is to gin up a bunch of people into a fervor, upset about some shit. Like 1 year it's the vaccines, another year it's the you know, whatever, like, you know, like the taxes, 1 year it's the trannies or whatever. Like, there's always some stupid ass thing that shows up every year that becomes like the big thing for that year, and every dimwit gets in a fervor about the fucking thing, and like, it's easy to stir up the dimwits, and the world is basically 70% that group, 80%, 90%. So you're talking about a very large group of people that you can basically manipulate to do practically anything you want and go kill each other and shit. So you wind up with
it's
these.
It's kind of difficult, right, to kill each other on that scale. But I mean, you can convince them to do a lot of stupid stuff, right?
Yeah, but this is why China banned the Western internet in China. They believe it, like, messes with the social cohesion locally. In fact, you can tell that, like, and you've seen China, but like, if you watch, my wife has been, you know, binge watching some like South Korean shit and like Chinese shit on Netflix or whatever, and just looking at the culture and stuff, and it's a very, very like the TV culture, I would say, is especially on Chinese culture, the. Like what they're willing to show and what they're willing to not show, there must be some pretty deep rules as far as what's allowable. Because like, even when you see criminals like portrayed, it seems like it's a muted version of like how bad criminals get. Whereas an American show is like they're conniving bastards, right? Like like there's some like pretty nasty characters. But if you, it's sort of like in the Chinese culture, like the it's a very very like. Homogeneous behavior, a homogeneous look, like what is construed as like a good look to have, what's appropriate clothing to have, what's appropriate behavior. It's like very, very deeply conformative, but simultaneously, there's not a lot of room there for a lot of artistic interpretation, or like they try to avoid, like, it seems like if you've seen enough of them, it's like, wow, they seem to really avoid a lot of sort of subject content matter. That you know the state basically feels is like you know bad juju or whatever, and it's very very interesting how that plays out. But I think
it's not so much a government mandate. Actually, I just think that they don't get financed by any investor if they show something that's kind of out of the line and odd.
Right.
The Asian culture is not very forgiving to outliers. I mean, you try to be gay in China or North Korea and live it out. Oh, good luck on you, you know. I mean,
I would say Indian.
They don't beat you up or something, you know, but it's not like people, they will just, I mean, your family will get so embarrassed, they won't open the door if you ring, right? It's just like something like that.
In India, it's gone quite a bit more liberal, actually. It was more conservative. Content, you know, let's say 20, 30 years ago, and that's become much more liberalized in terms of what is portrayed on screen, for sure.
I mean, it's not that they don't tolerate it. It's completely fine. No one has a beef with it. And in the big cities, you have gay people everywhere, right? But it's like for a family, for a normal setting, they're still very traditional in that way. And for them, it's hard to cope with because it doesn't fit into that procrastination pattern of having a family and everything. It just doesn't biologically fit, right? So it screws the whole way the family works and everything. That's my guess, you know, without trying to judge here, right?
So yeah, no, you it definitely has effects, because like I think 2007 onwards, you had this big drop off in the number of babies being born in the West, and it had something to do with like, it was, that's like 2007 is like more or less when smartphones came out. So, with iPhone and such. So it had whatever trend happened well before that. And it probably was just the beginning of online pornography was the big like linchpin. I bet you more than anything that was that, because that was not a time when necessarily it was expensive to have kids or anything like that. So all these other narratives, like,
well, my guess is, you know, you still see, I mean, at least in China, I still see things like, I have two persons that I know that are gay, two men, but they have a family and they're married, right? So I think this just happened all throughout Europe and the Western world. You have
a lot more of that in Asia.
In the past, right? But since it's okay to be gay, right? So they don't get married anymore and they don't get kids. So I mean, that could be related to it. Who am I to know, you know? But at least that's something that
Well, the woman's their baby maker, or maybe they're bi or some weird shit. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, what happened before, there wasn't any gay people out in the open, right? So they all were married, right? I mean, some were monks and in monasteries, but what happened with the rest? There's always a certain percentage of the population that's just inclined to the same gender, right? It's just nature, I guess.
Yeah.
To some extent. Anyway, so it's a difficult discussion to have, but
I can still
see that it exists like that in China. Like these guys, they hide their real personality and they just play along with being a happy family husband, right?
Right. Well, that's exactly the group that's going to be called out by AI pretty quickly. Yeah. Right. These machines are going to be able to tell exactly what you care about, what you don't.
You know.
And then not only that, but you can be manipulated based on those things too.
Yeah, I tell your wife, you know, send me some Zeph.
So, yeah, no, I think so. Yeah, all of this sort of plays into, you know, how the sort of like, you know, privacy narrative plays out. And again, like with crypto, a lot of what we're buying is the narrative, the story. Like, it doesn't mean that one crypto or the other is going to save the world or some shit. It's just a matter of like, you know, when these narratives start to sort of play out, you want to catch that, those coins or whatever early. And, you know, sometimes the narrative picks up and it goes viral. Other times it doesn't. It just depends. Like, look at the AI example. Like, so AI got interesting and OpenAI released a thing. And next thing you know, people are talking AI, AI, AI. And then not, next thing you know, everyone decides to go buy some AI token. And everything sort of pumps for no apparent reason, even though those projects are just vaporware for the most part. They don't really do very much AI stuff. It's just like, but they, people buy it because of the story. They figure other people are going to buy it because of the story. So they buy it because of the same story, is really all it is.
Are you farting my fat bag again? Don't do that.
Let's see here. What? So did, I was just looking at the difficulty rating on this network. I've been kind of monitoring how this early proof of work network is rolling in terms of like where price is and like where hash rate goes and stuff like that. And I've noticed the difficulty fell a little bit, and like, you know, my miner statistic says I'm making now, like, you know, at current difficulty, it'd be like 6.6 ZEF per month. So that's a big jump just now. So like my effective hash rate basically just hot popped for some reason, I guess because difficulty is a bit lower. It's paying out. My balance is pretty quick now though. So it's definitely, these two machines are printing some ZEF for sure. And as the price goes down, you would think that some of the random miners are going to like disappear. So what you want is like some of the random miners to sort of get away and like new miners to come on that are more serious about the network. So they're like the vampire miners that just come for the quick buck. You want them to mine a little bit, sell a little bit, and get the fuck out of here. And that would be ideal. You want the miners who want to hodl their coins, not the ones that want to sell them, ideally, because they believe in the long-term network. So they're mining for the like more idealistic reason as opposed to like paying the bills. Yeah, like someone like myself who's like, yeah, I really want this thing to work. I'm going to mine so that I can keep. And I bought two computers with a return on investment that takes like what? Like shit, like 2 years, maybe, or it depends on the price of Zephyr. But like it could take quite a while. But the presumption I have when I'm mining is that the number is going to go up. So therefore, like I'm buying the miner device so that the computer so that I can mine it for longer term, because I believe that there's an upside to this. There's other people that will just mine quickly while it's cheap or when the difficulty is low and then kind of sell into the market. And you want more of the hodler type miners ultimately who believe in the longer term, who will sell at a much higher level in terms of market cap. But yeah, Zephyr's like $23.98 right now. It's pretty good. Pretty good price in a bull market, I would say. You are now at a way to look at it generally is like you look at these tops. And you say, well, how much down are you from the top? And we're down at 54% from the top. The top is like the potential that you know that you can reach because you've gotten there before. And then it's like the percentage down from the top just gives you a sense of like, you know, am I buying at a value proposition or am I buying too expensive or whatever? In a bull market, I would say like 40% dips are common. In higher market cap things, such as like a Bitcoin or something like that. And then in lower market cap things, I would say like 40 to 70% drops would be pretty common, even in bullish conditions. So, you know, you don't want to panic and say, well, you know, like I bought it at $40 and now it's at 20. Oh no. I mean, yeah, these things can go down lower, but typically the way you scale into these types of things is you basically grab a bag and then you kind of like scale into the dips. So like I bought a fair amount at 27, 28 bucks, and the price of the coin is lower than what I bought it at, but I'm not too worried about it, right? That's why I also am doing some mining so that I get some coins that way. It's slightly different to sort of risk cost exposure, and then I'll scale into the very bottom like I do for everything. And I'm hoping actually it takes a little bit of a dip, because then like I can pick this shit up at like with something else that is actually going up, which is nice. Did you have anything else that popped, guys? Like any interesting coins or whatever that has made some moves? I think E-Gold's next is at 60 something. Its next resistance is at $97. It's at $63.90 right now. So I'm kind of holding on to that one. It's a bit of a higher market cap play. It's like number, what is it right now? It's in the top 100, one of those coins. Oh, it's market cap 44, rank 44. And that's a sharding based network and has pretty good network speeds. Works pretty well. There's just not too much to do on that chain yet. So there's a lot of development. You know, they're trying to kind of like build up developers and all that. It popped to like $475 on the last market though. So it really, really rocketed like big time from like $8 when it came out to like $500 at the top. I don't know if it's one of those that will beat its prior highs or not. I'm not really sure. I haven't paid too much attention to what that project has been doing exactly, so I can't really say one way or the other. I mostly bought it as a speculative bet because I bought it down low and I figured it would go up and I would sell it at some point. That's pretty much my research on that one. it hasn't failed, and it has active development, and it had a low. I bought it. Yay. That's the research. Nothing else. I don't know too much of the details of the thing, like some people. Oh, I think it's fixed supply too. That's the other alpha, if you care about that sort of thing. But again, fixed supply didn't keep it from going from like $500 at the top to like $30 at the bottom. So, supply and tokenomics and shit, all that's a meme in the short term and doesn't affect pumpamentals necessarily. Or I should say it doesn't affect immediate price action. It's more long-term. So the miners are doing good here. Noob, what's your buy price for many more Zeph? Do you have a number? You there?
Yeah, I'm just driving. I'm not sure if my microphone's okay.
Yeah, it sounds okay.
Yeah, it better be. It's an expensive microphone. So, it could dip. But I'm not so sure about this proof of work coins. There's too many eyes on Zeph, I guess. So let's see if we get an entry lower down.
Good question. Let's see what happened to this KLS thing. KLS was the one we just played around in for a minute. And some of the guys kept theirs. I see they're still posting about them. It's the reason I sold is because like there's a lot of fucking mining going on Carlson, because it's a GPU mined thing. And the hash rate was just absolutely off the chart, like in up into the terahash ranges. And my concern was that just like a gargantuan amount of supply coming into the market that's people are going to try to sell into. Its market cap right now, though, KLS trading volume about 1.3 million. And it's at about 12 cents right now. I bought it at 6, I believe, the first time, or 5 to 6. I sold it about 15 cents or something. So again, that's what I said before, like I was fine with missing the top, but I was going to sell while there was sufficient liquidity. And that was like in that 15, 16 cent range. And I did okay with it. Now I bought Zephyr with it and that's down a little bit, but you know, there you go. But, KLS went all the way to 26 cents and is now at 12. So it's not to say that it couldn't pump, like it's a bull market, so anything can go up. It's also down 54% from its top, but its top was sort of ridiculous in that like you had it's a very illiquid market with very few, little dollars tied to it. So you can get these wild ups and downs, but on KLS, on CoinGecko, they don't even like list the market cap yet. It just says max supply 5 billion. But it doesn't show like its market cap yet. Cause I think the market cap numbers are just absurd when you get up into the, I mean, even when you get up into the 12 cent range, the market cap starts getting looking absurd. So that's that. Better Future came in. He was asking me about Zephyr a bit, and I don't have, time to get on to a phone with him, but anyway, let me see if he's here. But yeah, this is definitely like, if you're going to be picking this up, you definitely want to do it at the bottoms, like, and you don't know where the bottom is, so the only way to know that is by picking up some all the way to the bottom. That's typically what I do. It's the concession that no matter how much charting and shit you do, you just don't know exactly where, which level it's going to hit. So the next fib level down for Zephyr from 25 is the like $15 level. Do we go to that? Maybe. I'll be there to pick it up at whatever price. So I'm fine with it. I don't know if Future's busy right now. Anyway, if anyone else wants to come up, got any questions, comments, any interesting stories to tell, whatever, go right ahead. We're just sort of hanging out here this morning.
Did you start working or are you still at home?
No, it's Sunday. I'm just chilling today.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, I wound up with jury duty tomorrow, so I'm not working tomorrow either. I'm just going to the court.
Okay.
I hope I don't get selected this time. Jesus, I always get selected for some reason.
Yeah, you probably make a nice face, you know? And they're
like, okay, something. <this guy." laughs> Something's going on over there.
Yeah.
I think it's based on professions too. Like, I think they prefer certain professions because they figure like there's at least someone with a brain in the room, like that kind of idea. Sometimes they want juries that have that are complete morons. Sometimes they want people that like they think they can convince you of one argument or the other through like information.
Do you actually know what case you will be judging?
No, not yet.
Tell you.
Okay. You don't get told this, and then. And then once you get selected, you can't talk about it until the case is over, kind of a thing either.
Get it.
Because that way you don't wind up in, you know, influencing the case or the whoever. But
What kind of cases are typically?
It could be anything.
Could
be anything. Like, yeah. Criminal, federal, state, like local, civil, whatever. It could be anything. Yeah, just you don't know until you get there. They'll usually have all those courts running daily, and they'll have selection periodically, and you'll have to go. Anyway, CypherCat, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, so what's this all about? You guys are talking about privacy narratives? I just wanted to kind of add to it if I could.
Yeah, shoot.
But where are you guys at so far in the conversation? I guess I just showed up.
Yeah, we kind of covered a lot. But basically that with CBDCs, AI, and all the other infringements on privacy, you're basically going to get, a narrative form around that, which has not been there before because, previously we just lived in the old world. Now the CBDCs are popping up all over the world, like something like 50 projects in testnet or development right now all over the world, coupled with, AI invading privacy and all the scams that are going to happen with that. We're just talking about how privacy narratives are probably going to catch a bid, and certain coins and things that are in that space are probably going to, really move this time compared to previous years, is a theory. Certainly that's us forming a theory and just spreading it too. So like we're sort of creating the narrative while we're talking about the narrative. But Zephyr is one of the ones that like a lot of us are in here that, is at a very low market cap right now. It's a new proof of work privacy based on Monero. And it has a lot of interesting properties that, give it some flywheel effects and convenience features like a over-collateralized stablecoin and things like that. So it's a pretty interesting model that we've been looking at. But
I guess like...
full disclosure, we all bought some.
So. Yeah. I guess what I would add to it is like... I kind of come to a couple revelations over the last, like, I don't know, I've been in crypto for probably like been close to like a decade now, which has been, it's ridiculous. I've been here since I've been a teenager. But like, there's a couple things that are kind of interesting. So like, so store of value is just a derived function of a medium of exchange, right? So you basically want cash, right? And so if you want cash, anything like all these coins can function as cash. You basically just need crypto, so which is already pseudonymous, and then you need something similar to like kind of like what we have with Bitcoin Cash. There's Cash Fusion, so you can build something like that, and then you need to distribute that out and make sure that that's also not something that's a risk of getting attacked or coming down by a government, right? But you basically have the base.
What's Cash Fusion? Is it like a mixer or something, or what is it?
Yeah, it's just like a privacy layer. It's kind of like imagine turning on a VPN, right? You're just kind of like making your coins invisible for a bit, and then you can make it visible again. So, and Elon Musk said something about this recently, which was about cash. And he was talking about how one of the main features of cash is that it functions both publicly and privately. He said it differently. He said it that it was the bridge to the legal and the illegal transactions, which is why it was used so globally. And I think that that's true, and it can be true for a lot of these things. And I also believe in like a multi-chain future. Like, I think the way that we all truly scale is through side chains, like working together. So like basically like my if Bitcoin Cash is working great, that's awesome. But then why don't you have another chain that's working right alongside it that it's communicating with, and we're all just kind of growing together?
My basic philosophy is that the more decentralized, the more options you have, the more decentralized crypto becomes, right? Because like decentralization comes in many forms, comes in volume of coins, of types of coins, not just in your individual network and like your Nakamoto coefficient or something like that, right? So
yeah, because someone was trying to explain to me that they didn't think that it was possible, and I was like, no, it's very possible. What you do is you have an oracle service, right, that communicates information between two separate smart contracts. So you have a smart contract on BCH, and you have a smart contract on some other network, and then those two things can.
One of the examples of that, I guess, is like Chainlink CCIP, right? So CCIP would be the perfect example. So like what Chainlink brings to truth and interchain connectivity, sort of like Zephyr brings to, I guess, like privacy and sovereignty. So I think each project is optimized for a different thing. And there's a lot of cool things in crypto. It's not just the store of value and whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing that's super important, is that there is no such thing as a store of value. If you look up like as its core, you can't start off with store of value. There is medium of exchange, and then there is store of value as a derived function of medium of exchange. So you need the velocity. You need people using it and moving it around constantly, or else there's never going to be such a thing. You just end up with illiquid coins, right? So it's very important that it starts off with medium of exchange. And I think that a lot of coins are going to start maybe like the Zeph project and XMR. I think that a lot of the network is going to start waking up to this concept, because it's core. And it's like, if people don't understand that it's like it's more of a side effect than a core feature, I would very much urge people to look up the Tulip Bubble Mania. Because that was a very good historical piece.
Not everything that can be exchanged becomes a store of value. It's as simple as that, right? So you and I could trade Pokemon cards. Can we be sure that Pokemon cards store value 50 years from now? That's a maybe.
Yeah, but Pokemon cards are only going to be valuable if they're used constantly, right? It's about the velocity, right? If people are constantly on eBay swapping back and forth, then it's valuable. If everyone stops doing that, it doesn't matter anymore.
Right. Yep.
Anyways, I can let somebody else go up. Just wanted to share my
day. Yeah. And this is all a pretty crypto-native crowd here, by the way. So it's like, everyone's on board with the same ideas, I think, for the most part. But I think one thing that I kind of made a comment about earlier was that privacy specifically has not achieved much of a market cap in the grand scheme. Like less than $5 billion market cap of the entire crypto space is involved with privacy at the moment. So it hasn't caught a bid for some reason. And it's because most people in crypto, for number to go up, they're not necessarily here for the utility. That's mostly a lie. 95% of people do not care about the utility. They want number to go up. And the reality is that like privacy in particular has been a very niche piece of the gigantic Venn diagram of all possible crypto users. Whereas if you ask a person normally, like, would you think your personal privacy is important? They'll say yes. When it comes to where they invest their money, they don't necessarily put it into privacy related anything. And my point was that like the narratives for privacy are probably going to get an uptick over the next 2 years, because with AI coming and all the different ways AI can fuck you over, and with CBDCs coming and the way that that can create a relative like machine totalitarian state, those two things put together make it much more likely for something like this to catch a bid. By the way, Vincent, you're trying to add on. I keep trying to add you to speak, but it won't work. You might need to close the app and come back and then try again for speaker.
But like to your point, I kind of missed the days of where we were seen as like almost like the bad guys, because we were like the crypto dudes. But it was like it was fun because there was nothing that the government could do to stop us. And it's still kind of true today, where it's like there's nothing
that's
that they
why
can
I'm,
do.
That's why I'm in Zephyr now. I'm like you. I've been around a bit. And Zephyr makes me feel young again.
Like, yeah, we have to. This has to be about sticking it to the man. You can't comply your way to freedom. It doesn't work like that. Like you have to be kind of.
Let me tell Reggie here. He's trying to add for speaker, but it won't connect. You need to close out the app completely. Come back and then try to request. Your account is bugged or something. It won't let me add you.
There's this principle in Taoism where it's like the more you fight something, the more like the opposite of what you want, like just inevitably it kind of starts to happen.
Tripping on the bird app, listening to nerds flap, wondering why the fuck my timeline's so cursed. It's like everybody's holding heavy bags in Web3. That's why they can't fly, they just drowning in the bird bath, fishing for some dry powder. Watch how we ignite the tower, blowing up their bank accounts, forgetting how to fight the power. Y'all don't even realize how deep this shit goes. They preach an open source, but don't listen to the code. And now it's mutiny, community, uprise. There's no more humility, futility, plus size. Motherfuckers leaking from the wrench down to the bare metal. Which side of the line you bleeding out on when the dust settles? Motherfucking west side shit, needle and noose. Sticking with my armory, and Beto and Bruce. Repping psychedelic artistry, believing the truth. Like these motherfuckers even need a reason to sue? GM fam.
Really? Worth all the effort? Is it really worth all the fighting? Is it really worth all the drama? And the answer, I think, is a clear no.
We started using Zoom, now we finna zoom out. Teaching all these plebidites what this game's really all about. Little baby bitches when they choose to have fits. All you're left with is kibble when you lose all them bits. And that kibble's just sawdust, the shit is all rust. Not a great look, you're what we call all nuts. And I for one did not see that coming. Cracking open books, yo, that's a lot of money. Meanwhile over here rewiring features. More critical thinking, less knee-jerk. More evolution, less shit. Coin preachers pretending to be teachers. Y'all just predatory leeches. I mean, please, just look at the track record. A bunch of VC rat fucks sucking up the cheddar. The recipe is two steps, rinse and repeat. Now we all in your butts and we bring in receipts. GM fam, have a seat.
If you're listening to this, my plea to you would be like, don't have to take a side on it. Just say like, is it really worth this war of attrition? It might cost us a lot more than what can be gained by like fighting this to the better end. And sometimes it's better to just like move on.
Terror Spaces.